I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB with Michael Tilson Thomas at Tanglewood. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes of your time to talk with me about the concert today.
My great pleasure. I'm back to Tanglewood. It's one of my points of origin in this musical world.
So I have come to understand. That's right. And we talked a few years ago about your memories. And I remember you telling me about seeing Louis Speyer on the porch at the main house and having memories of that as you walk around. So I'm sure there's a lot more than that. But let's talk first about the first piece on the program written by you, Agnagram. And tell me, basically, why did you include this piece on this particular program?
It's a brilliant, joyous opening piece, lasting a little under 7 minutes. It's ideal for this program. That's what it's designed to do. It was written in tribute for the 90th birthday of Agnes Albert, who was a trustee of the San Francisco Symphony. She herself had been a concert pianist when she was a lass. She was an explorer. She was the first woman to go down the Grand Canyon in a boat. She was a remarkable personality. And this piece uses the available letters of her name, Agnes Albert, which gives you 6 possible notes, and everything in the piece is based on those 6 notes, including the use of such letters as S, because in German, S means E flat. You have to trust me on that one.
Absolutely, I trust you. And composition is something that people don't, you know, they think of you as a conductor first, but is composition something that you want to spend more time on as the years go on and as you look forward to leaving the San Francisco Symphony in a couple of years?
With what I have in motion right now, I think in 3 years or so, people will think of me much more as a composer than as a conductor. I'll be doing much more of it, and I'll be going around to performances of my pieces that are being given, which is something I only started doing recently.
Fantastic. Igor Levit, I wonder what it is that you hear in his playing, aside from the sheer technical mastery that he possesses. What is it that he brings to his playing, and especially to a piece like the Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, that you feel is unique?
This is the first time he and I have ever worked together, or even maybe met one another. I think we met briefly backstage in Lucerne once. So it's a real kind of first date. It's fun, you know. We're getting acquainted and sort of seeing where our various reaction times are. But he is a patrician player, you know, and he plays with great sense of elegance and with a great awareness of the larger musical designs of things, which is also where I'm coming from. So we're having a good time.
So this summer here at Tanglewood is dedicated to Leonard Bernstein, a celebration of his centenary. And
we're referring to it as the Lentennial now.
The Lentennial. That's been, I can see the t-shirts already.
Yeah.
When it comes to Mahler, I mean, we talked about Mahler the last time you were here at Tanglewood because you did the Fifth Symphony. So, and I'm very aware, and I love your own particular history with Mahler. Is there something that Lenny brought to you about Mahler, something that you learned from him, either directly through your close relationship or just through his performances and his own history with Mahler?
Well, he was a great one for asking questions, and he was never happier than when the answer to a question was still another question. So he had confidence in me. He didn't tell me specific things, but he would sort of say, well, have you ever thought about this place right here? There are a lot of ways that could be, right? Or what do you think about this? Anyway, after one performance of the Fifth Symphony, which I gave in what was then Philharmonic Hall, I guess, he came back and everyone cleared out, and I said, so Lenny, what did you think of my performance? And he said, what do I think about it? I think that when you've totally made up your mind exactly what it means to you and what you propose to do about it, you won't care what I think or anybody else thinks. You'll just know it's right for you, and that'll be the end of it. You're not quite there yet, but you know, you're on your way. Let's go have dinner.
I guess that counts as learning something from him, I suppose. But
it was a little bit like wax on, wax off kind of, you know, approach to...
That's a fantastic story. From. Well, you did tell me last time we talked about your first experience, and this is something you actually recount in your Keeping Score episode about Mahler, of hearing Das Lied when you were 13 years old, and what a life-changing event that was. I don't think most people enter Mahler through Das Lied. It's actually more common, maybe, that people enter it through the piece you're conducting here. So tell me, with Mahler so central in your own life as a musician, Where does the First Symphony sit within that centrality, if I can kind of coin a phrase there?
Well, as you know from having seen that Keeping Score show, I mean, I had a real breakthrough when I was in the town, used to be called Iglau, now it's called Jihlava, in the Czech Republic, the town where Mahler grew up, because it's so clear that the symphonies, the world of the symphonies, really is very much kind of analog of the world in which Mahler lived in that town. And that when you're in the town, the center of the town is an enormous town square, which was a parade ground. There were thousands and thousands of soldiers billeted there and who were drilling all the time. A block away, less than a block away, was his parents' home, which was also a tavern. There was all kinds of music being played there from the Austrian and Hungarian and Romanian and Czech tradition. Then there was a synagogue down the street where he was studying. There was a Catholic church in which he was a chorister singing things by Handel. There was the gymnasium across town. But a lot of this, to reach a lot of this, he had to go through a big green space, which was around the town. So there were all these elements, the nature music, the cabaret music, the military music, the whole kind of world that is represented again and again in the symphonies. This First Symphony is in some ways the most challenging because it is the most naive and requires one to go back to a kind of state of innocence and also to deal with a lot of very awkward, demanding instrumental things, which in later years he learned to handle in a much more expeditious way.
And I also am curious about the number of versions of the First Symphony. It's one that he just kept working on, it seemed. And there was even a performance in the, about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago of the actual original first version. I wonder about whether you've looked at those other versions, how much you learned from them, and especially the inclusion or not inclusion of the Blumina movement. Tell me about how you filter through all of that and decide on the version that you're doing here.
Well, thinking about such things has occupied, obviously, many years, many decades at this point of my life. Blumina is a beautiful sentimental piece, which was probably composed for a summer pageant at a health spa where he was working one summer. It is like, in a way, the kind of lyrical theme of the last movement. The scene that goes, which Mahler said this represented the dreams of his youth. There's very little music in his surviving music that is in that kind of sentimental mood. I think this is something that he obviously understood well, but went to great pains to remove from his music, to abstract it in a way that it wasn't quite as much heart on your sleeve as that music in the last movement and Blumina are. But to give you an idea of the way his thinking changed, in the First Symphony original version, after the there's this, which comes in now, which was originally played by a group of horns off stage. And he changed it to be played by three clarinets on stage. And they're playing pianissimo and very staccato. But in terms of being a storyteller in sound, having these very dolce, quiet clarinets imitate the sound of horns in the distance is a far more poetic and magical thing than actually having real horns do that. It's moving it still into a more colorful and mystical almost world. And that's the kind of approach that he increasingly had toward his musical style, the way he used the orchestra, of creating kind of magical spaces, particularly things involving tenderness.
Well, Michael Tilson Thomas, thanks so much for bringing this piece back to Tanglewood and welcome back to Tanglewood. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure always. Thank you.